Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are talking about something that is affecting all our lives, businesses, government, schools, hospitals, and that is energy. That is the electricity crisis that we currently face in South Africa. And that energy crisis has culminated over the last couple of years in continued rounds of load shedding, and the year has actually started off on a foot where we've had rounds of load shedding almost every week, the latest being in the past week having stage 2 and 3 load shedding in parts of the country. Now, to discuss where technology could assist us in this matter, specifically when it comes to artificial intelligence, we are joined by FNB's Dr. Mark Nasila, who is the Chief Analytics Officer at the bank in FNB's Chief Risk Office. We just want to get a sense of, you know, what technology can do, what some of these emerging technologies can actually help us to do when it comes to this energy crisis. So, greetings, Doctor. How are you?
Greetings, and thank you very much for having me, as well as to the listeners who are joining us.
I think a good place for us to start, because we've already mentioned the words load shedding, electricity, energy crisis, and artificial intelligence. We are here to discuss the artificial intelligence. How does that help us to solve a crisis which has been almost years or decades in the making?
So, to begin with, we are experiencing the energy crisis in the form of load shedding, as you summarized. But when you look at the challenges that are driving this crisis, they range from growing demand from users of energy, operational efficiencies. This range from inability to have renewable energy form part of the grid to resource management. So some of these operational efficiencies result to energy costing so high because the inefficiencies results to costs which are indirectly passed on to users in some instances. We do have maybe there needs to be more engagement between service providers in the energy sector with us customers. And this, some of these challenges are very complex. And this is not just from the fact that we are at the era of AI and technology, but countries like Germany in Europe, America, have gone through similar crises, and they had to resort to technology because technology is better at handling some of these complex scenarios, handling machine-driven problems, driving operational efficiencies. And when we go through critical examples, you will notice that the old way of dealing with these problems cannot help us solve the energy crisis. We need to leverage technologies to handle some of the complex problems, which are getting worse and worse on time.
I think someone who's listening to us would then wonder, especially on the examples front, you know, if you could give us an example of what you mean, because when we use terms like operational efficiencies, people often wonder what that actually means in a practical sense.
All right. So, the first thing is we understand part of the problem is that there's a growing demand for energy. And we've been depending on energy from one source predominantly, which is coal power plant driven. And there's entire need to us to resort to having renewable energy, such as wind energy, solar energy, form part of the grid. But having a grid is not enough because there needs to be better ways of making sure that you know, renewable energy is integrated into the grid. And therefore, it's important that the first technology we have to think about is the smart grid technology. So it's a grid technology that is digitally driven. It would allow us to easily manage different sources of energy into the grid. It will allow us to manage transmission much better. It will allow us to manage transmitting, you know, energy into you know, households and different users. We've got examples like Siemens, who have developed a software which makes a grid smart. So the advantage of having a grid that is smart is that it allows the grid to generate data, data that shows how much energy is being integrated into the grid and at a source level, as granular as possible. This is important for planning purposes, because some of the issues we're dealing with is if we having events or lack of sufficient energy, it costs us more when we are reactive to situations. A smart grid would also enable not just the government, but ESCOM and other providers understand the consumption at a household level through smart meters. So people consume energy for different purposes, and just having a blanket approach of having them access energy through prepaid or, you know, prepaid meters or different channels does not help, because energy might be being wasted while it could be used through other channels. Now, you talked about operational efficiency. So part of the sheer problem is integrating renewable energy into the grid. But we know very well South Africa has so much potential for wind energy and solar energy that even countries like Germany and you know, in America, that are generating so much energy through these sources. But there has to be a way of storing this energy, because we know sometimes as much as this potential, but these sources are intermittent, and having a storage system that is sufficient enough can allow different sources to channel their energy into the grid and store it, so that you know, you can have this energy being distributed when there is demand for it. Then the data from the grid, as well as, you know, failures of systems we've seen before, can be used in AI and machine learning systems to proactively predict where there's likely to be a failure in the future. So we've seen power plants fail. There was one recently which was under fire. We had Medupi a few years ago, which cost billions actually. So data on an ongoing basis can be collected by the grid, as well as smart technology such as drones. It costs us a lot to, you know, to manually physically go into the grid, into the power plant. Sometimes it's life threatening. We've had, you know, engineers die there. But with drone technology, you can actually channel drones into a power plant, take images on an ongoing basis at almost a percentage of the cost of how it's done today. This would allow, you know, engineers to reconstruct images or 3D print images that will provide a view of any likely potential failures in the future.
Dr. Nasila, as you are giving the example right now, especially the one about using drones as opposed to having engineers going into some of the power plants, one of the biggest criticisms, and I'm sure this is a question that you get a lot or something you encounter all the time, but one of the criticisms when it comes to using artificial intelligence and machine learning and all of this is people being afraid that their jobs or their roles will be replaced by, in this case, a drone, for example. So how do you sort of, I guess, allay some of those fears whilst at the same time dealing with the tension when it comes to the makeup of the South African economy and specifically the labor force?
So it's a very good question, and it's important that we address it, because sometimes it creates fear, and in a justifiable way. So the role of machines is to perform complex repetitive tasks. And while this is happening on a traditional basis, it's allowed us as humans to focus on performing tasks that require reasoning that require us to do discovery. Machines cannot reason, they cannot process new problems and strategize. When we embark on a strategy to leverage technology, we also need to predefine what role will human beings play in the future. So for example, in this case, there will be a whole lot of new jobs created. So where instead of the workforce physically going into power plants, they would actually resort to working with drones, navigating drones through different paths geographically to getting them there, collecting data from the drones, and performing tasks like even manually running algorithms that will help them understand where failures are likely to be. We have a company called Drone Deploy. It's actually a company being run by South Africans in Silicon Valley. I met the chief technology officer, and the drone technology creates totally new sets of jobs. But it's the responsibility of the organization to make sure that they do create a transformation journey. At the end of the day, one comforting thing is that machines can never work by themselves. Machines need us as human beings to tell them, to keep on updating them and providing feedback to them so that they can keep on performing those functions.
You know, the other thing to consider is what would it actually take if we were to maybe zoom out a little bit? What would it actually take to change mindsets when it comes to, this specific issue that we're discussing right now? Simply because there are those economies, I'm thinking of countries like Sweden, where there's a very huge technology focus and, services-based economies, etc. How do we move up, the ladder in a way that you get the technology to come in and automate or take on certain tasks that would otherwise, that humans can then focus on more complex tasks? I think the example I always think about in my head is that once upon a time, when the motor vehicle was still a new invention, there were literally physical human beings that used to stand at intersections and change the green, red, and amber lights physically to do that before, we just automated that into the traffic lights that we see today. So how do we, sort of get there? Because all of this at the end of the day does work in the greater good, especially if it's going to help us in some way to solve the energy crisis.
Thank you. So as a nation, we need to speak the same language around technology, artificial intelligence, and data. And when I say speak the same language, it's everyone, all of us, not just stakeholders who are driving technology initiatives, not just the government, or not just the public sector or the private sector, which is innovating a lot using technology. Everyone. Now, if you look at what is happening globally, you've got China and America that are solving a lot of problems using technology. And it's because they've built a culture. America is leading through building a culture through their institutions that have built a culture which extends to organizations, even primary schools. In China, a young boy who's 8 years old could assemble for you a phone on the street because they've built a culture of executing through technology. And for us, we need to make sure that the whole society is literate around artificial intelligence, around data, which basically drives artificial intelligence and other emerging technologies. So we have to embrace technology, because through technology, we're going to solve some of the problems we're dealing with. Through technology, we're going to create new jobs, because the technology will help us create new ways of working in the future, which will basically be driven by new jobs. But at the same time, we have to understand that we don't want to end up becoming spectators of consumers of outcomes of technologies from the Western world. We need to embrace it so that we can solve some of these problems. we can create an abundant future. The more we wait, the more the gap between us as a nation through different sectors, not just energy alone, it widens and it makes us become so much dependent. We know very well energy is the fuel of all the other sectors and in general the economy. So we have to embrace technology and help our country become much better.
The other one is maybe getting a sense or understanding, because usually we're used to getting or hearing these types of conversations and discussions with technology companies. But FNB is a bank, one of the biggest in the country. What is your interest in terms of this crisis and actually looking at AI and all of those things?
So one of the key challenges, if you look at what's happening, is that you need to have all sectors work together to dealing with the crisis, the corporate sector, the public sector, and FNB as a bank or even any other organization, first of all, is driving climate risk initiatives, which imply that we're at the forefront of making sure we support initiatives that make us depend or rely on renewable energy, which is cleaner for the environment. Which means, you know, we do encourage our customers to make sure that, you know, they do invest in renewable energy friendly houses, solar driven houses, and houses that are, you know, consume less energy to perform some tasks. But in the long run, as any financial institution knows very well that if energy is not good, is not sustainable, it affects every other industry, it affects our customers, it affects the manufacturing industry, which is at the core of driving the economy. It affects everything, education, health. And for us, if you have, for example, a smart grid will generate a lot of data which will allow us to understand how we can integrate some of our strategies. I think this type of data would allow us to even share some insights around, for example, how do we encourage some of our customers to invest in renewables? You know, we are an organization that is risk-driven, and because of that, data would help us a lot in understanding how we quantify farm risk, how we make investments. For example, credit, you could, you know, use the same data to assess and which investments would likely to lead to a more energy sustainable country.
As we come to the close of this discussion, Dr. Nasila, in looking to the future, or at least in the short term, what initiatives or types of things do you think need to be done to get the country on this path of actually using some of these technology advances to be solving issues like energy in the country? Simply because from everything you said, it sounds like there's a lot that needs to be done. It's lots of complex issues, and that energy is just one of the issues that could be fixed. So if we're to put together maybe a roadmap, at least in the short term, of a few things that do need to get done to get the country on the right track, you know, what's your thinking around that?
Right. So when you look closely around, for example, delivering technology to kickstart and to gain momentum, we first of all need to build on literacy around data and technology. For us to make any success out of there, we need everyone to be involved, so that technology can be used to not only be proactive and solve some of the challenges, but also to reimagine the future. The whole world is changing. The ways of working have changed. And it will also happen in the energy industry, in the medical or health industry, in the education industry. The ways of learning will change. And the consumers of technology should be at the forefront of driving that transformation. The second part is we need all the sectors to work together. And this is what is being driven by a new model called the fourth sector, where the principles from the private sector, principals from the public sector and the social sector come together to solve some of the challenges. There's no sector that is going to solve these problems by themselves. Technology by itself can be an integrator or a gateway to these sectors working together, but all sectors have to understand that it will take a new culture from the beginning, so from a leadership to the people to collaboration and solving these challenges, so that all sectors can have a fulfilled ways of working and a fulfilled execution of their individual strategies. So collaboration is key, but also literacy around technology. Technology by itself will drive accountability to making sure that we design and create a better future for the country through all sectors.
So that's been it for this edition. That was us with Dr. Mark Nasila, who is the Chief Analytics Officer in FNB's Chief Risk Office, giving us some insight into how AI or artificial intelligence could actually help to solve South Africa's energy crisis. He's talking about things like using drones to survey or to monitor certain parts of the power generation process, taking out the human factor and making it safer. But also, tied to that is the fact that by taking out human beings from parts of the process, there is that fear that the machines are here to take our jobs. But he's saying that shouldn't necessarily be the case, because in other parts of the world, there's been a collective move where automation is coming in, but people are getting on to do more complex tasks in the economy. He also talks about smart grids and also talks about FNB's interest and talking about how they're actually helping to advise some of these things, because it needs to be a collective effort throughout the economy. So that's been it. Dr. Nasila, thank you so much for being with us. For people that perhaps want to engage more, we understand that you are an author. How can people who may want to learn more or either engage with you or your writings actually either get in touch or get a hold of some of the work that you've done?
Well, thank you so much for having me. For those interested in engaging, I'm very active on LinkedIn and Twitter. And I'm always available to get feedback on some of the opinion pieces we're putting together. And I do look forward to engaging with all the listeners who are interested in taking these conversations further.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
The same type of thinking that has gotten South Africa to its current energy crisis is unlikely, and one would expect that it will not be the same type of thinking that will get us out of the current situation. Something has to change, which is why I think conversations such as this, just looking at different options, such as what's going on in the artificial intelligence space, how can we use that to try and help with the energy crisis? I think conversations like this, they really do help try to take South Africa forward, and also just in terms of energy, energy generation and distribution, but other parts of the economy as well. This is not to say that artificial intelligence is going to be the panacea or the silver bullet that's just going to help us get rid of load shedding in South Africa, but just approaching these issues from different points of view is something that will at least try to help us get on the right path, because right now that's what we need. There's been a status quo, there's been a certain way of doing things over the last couple of years, and it would take a long time to actually I don't know what word to use, but to unbundle or to sort of work our ways back to try and correct what's actually happened over the years. You know, simple things such as coal, you know, getting wet, the breaking down of power stations. All of these things are things that could be planned for. They're things that we could be sufficiently planning to do maintenance on, all of those things. But if we can get artificial intelligence to come in and to help us to streamline some of those processes in a way that will make power last 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, I think that would be for the greater good. And it's one of those things that then helps when South Africa talks about trying to recover or try to make back the losses of the last year. Electricity generation is just one of those things. Think about the downtime that a lot of businesses are forced to have when electricity goes out. How do we say that we are trying to get back on the path to economic growth if we hinder economic growth by not having power for significant parts of the day? In some cases, just 2 hours, just the process of actually preparing to shut down machines or switching machines back on is such a laborious process, or is actually such an intense process, that some people might even lose more than that just in terms of productivity. So these are all the things to think about. And if artificial intelligence can help us to streamline and to make some of those processes better, then surely these are things that we should be considering in conjunction with other types of different thinking that can help us to get out of the mess that we're in. But more importantly, just communicating. We spoke a lot about how education, when it comes to getting people just to understand what technology does and what it does not do, and the fact that it's not a threat and something that's here to help us, it really does need to be made concrete. And it makes perfect sense, because bread and butter issues are very important, especially in a country like South Africa, where you have such a high rate of unemployment. How do you convince people that the machines that are being said to come and take away even more jobs are not going to worsen the situation that a lot of people are in? These are the issues that that companies, that government needs to grapple with. These are the things that need to be communicated effectively. Otherwise, anything, as always, that takes the economy forward is a good thing. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, where #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.